want to talk to you about today is some work I've been doing at UC Riverside with my advisor, John Trumbull, and our collaborator, Dave Parker, who's in the Environmental Sciences Department. And what we are trying to figure out, what we want to know, is how pollution might influence this biological control system with the salt cedar plant and its beetle biological control agent. I'm sorry, how do I advance?
Oh, either with the space bar or the arrows.
You may need to click on the slide first.
Okay. Some background about salt cedar. There are at least four species in North America and the United States that are very invasive, but I learned yesterday at this symposium that there may be as many as 10 species, and that the issue is further complicated because these plants can hybridize in North America. They don't do this in their native range, but they hybridize, so there's an incredible genetic diversity of salt cedar plants. Additionally, although the plants were introduced as early as the late 1800s, their range is still expanding. So why are these plants so bad? Why are we concerned about salt cedar? Well, like many invasive species, it crowds out native plants and provides an inferior habitat for native wildlife. Additionally, salt cedar has been found to increase the frequency of fire in areas where it occurs, and also to build up salt concentrations in the soil. And this has to do with salt cedar's incredibly long roots that are able to reach groundwater and take up water and anything that water may be containing from deeper in the soil and deposit it on the surface. And in areas where salt cedar forms dense monocultures, such as pictured here, it's actually been found to deplete the water table in the area. In an attempt to control this plant, a beetle has been imported. This is the Diorhabda elongata beetle. It's in the family Chrysomelidae, and it's been found to be very promising so far. It's been released in some areas in the western United States with a good degree of success. It feeds on the foliage both as the larva and the adult, both pictured here. And I have a colony of these things, and I can tell you from experience, they're voracious feeders. They eat a lot of plant material. And we want to know, what we're looking for is what pollution does to this system. So there are lots of environmental contaminants out there, and tamarix, or salt cedar, has been shown to take up some of these by the studies listed here, as well as a few others. And for our study, we can't look at all the pollutants out there, so we chose four to look at, the four listed here, perchlorate, selenium, manganese, and hexavalent chromium. And to create our treatments, our experimental treatments, we chose the concentrations also listed here. And we tried to pick a number that was within the range of what might be found at, say, a Superfund site or a contaminated area, but on the high end of that range, so that if there was an effect, we would be sure not to miss it. To perform our experiments, we grew our plants from cuttings from the field, and this sort of illustrates the real invasiveness of this plant, that you can actually just cut a stick of the plant from the field, strip off the foliage, and grow them hydroponically fairly easily. So it took about a month for our plants to root and produce a good amount of foliage. So when the plants were of a suitable size, we added pollutant into the growing solution, and we allowed the plants to take up that pollutant for 1 week. At the end of the week, while still exposing the plants to pollutants, we added the larvae to the system. So the larvae were individually weighed and then individually caged on the plant. And we allowed those larvae to feed on the treated plants for 1 week. At the end of the experimental period, we removed the larvae, weighed them again, and then preserved them for chemical analysis. We also preserved samples of foliage, and we took water samples at 2 or 3 time points throughout the experiment to look for concentrations of pollutants in the water. And what I'm going to show you first is our larval weight data, because this is really what we were looking for. This is the important part of the experiment. On the y-axis here, we have the larval weight, but it's been adjusted for starting weight. And then on the x-axis, of course, is treatment. And for manganese and chromium shown here, we did not find an effect on the larvae. So even though these plants were exposed to the pollutants, the larval growth was the same. Similarly here, we see more results for larval mass. And perchlorate, like manganese and chromium, was not found to affect larval mass. However, the presence of selenium in the growing water was found to reduce larval mass substantially by about 40%, and this is a significant reduction. So then we wanted to look more closely at this system, at what was going on. The beetles that weren't affected by the pollutants, were the pollutants maybe not actually present as we thought in the growing water? Were they not taken up into the plant, or were they not taken up by the beetles? So we analyzed the samples I mentioned earlier. And first I'm going to show you our results for water concentrations. The red lines in each graph represent the concentration of the treatment water, and the blue lines represent the control water over time. And what we found, first of all, the most importantly, we were successful in adding these pollutants to the water and having them be in solution and be available for the plant. Additionally, we found that in the case of perchlorate and selenium, the concentration actually increased over time. And this was due to the fact that rather than replacing growing water as the solution was taken up by the plant or evaporated, we simply added more solution to the growing containers. So that resulted in a concentration over time. However, manganese and chromium did not increase over time. In fact, they were a little bit lower than we thought what we were actually adding to the solution. And this is almost certainly due to the presence of organic matter in our growing solution. Manganese and chromium are known to bond with organic matter and precipitate out, so that's why these concentrations weren't as high as we thought they were going to be. However, they still were significantly elevated over control concentrations, so there still was pollutant present. Next, we looked at foliar concentrations. Were the plants actually taking up these pollutants that we put into the water? And in fact, they were. In the case of all four pollutants, the concentration in treatments was significantly higher than in controls. And notice that on the y-axis here, this is a log transformation, and I'll be showing the raw data later if you're interested in that. And lastly, of course, we wanted to see if the pollutants were present in the larvae that were feeding on the plants. And similarly, they were significantly higher in treated larvae compared to controls. So they were present in the larvae. And here are the raw data. This is a little bit complicated, so I'll go through it with you. On the left-hand side, there is the list of the different pollutants that we were looking at. The next column over is our nominal concentration level, so the concentration we thought we were adding to the water. And then the next column over is our measured water concentration. This is an average over all the time points that we looked at. And notice that the first number listed, so for example, for perchlorate, 310, that's the parts per million, that's milligrams per liter, in the treatment water. That's an average over all time points. And the number below that, 0.01, is the control level. Again, averaged over all the time points for the sample. The next column over is concentrations in plants. This is in dry weight or dry mass, milligrams per kilogram. And again, with the treatments and the controls listed. And then finally, for the larvae, again, a dry mass concentration of milligrams per kilogram. And the take-home message that I want you to see from this slide is that the concentrations in larvae are significantly elevated in treatments, but they are a little bit less, in almost all cases, they're less than was found in the plants. So the contaminants are being transferred, but at lower concentrations. With the exception of chromium, which is actually at a higher level, you see here at the bottom, 2 versus 12 milligrams per kilogram. So they were actually the chromium was actually higher in beetles. So to add another element to this set of experiments, we were able to analyze field-collected tamarisk plants for the concentrations of these different pollutants. And we did this with the help of Tom Dudley and his research group from UC Santa Barbara. They're working with this beetle in the field for biological control, and they were able to mail us samples from 12 sites in California, Nevada, and Utah. And so on the right are pictured our concentrations that we found in field plants. In the case of perchlorate and selenium, they were surprisingly low in field plants, lower even than our laboratory controls. And alternatively, for manganese and chromium, concentrations in field plants were higher than our laboratory controls, but lower than our treatments. So what conclusions can we draw from all this? Firstly, that all these contaminants that we studied were accumulated by tamarisk plants. And secondly, that they were all transferred to beetles, although in some cases at lower concentrations than in plants, with the exception of chromium. And then most importantly, we found that perchlorate, manganese, and chromium at the concentrations that we tested and over the time period that we tested did not have an effect on beetle mass. However, selenium significantly reduced beetle mass by 40%. And the implications of this work are that in areas of high selenium contamination, such as much of the Central Valley of California, there may be some issue with biological control. These beetles may grow slower, their populations may grow slower. And then lastly, there's always the issue of contaminant transfer when you're working with pollutants, such as to predators. So for example, if we had an insectivorous bird feeding on these beetles, they might be taking up these pollutants as well. So I'd like to thank the following people. If there's time, we'll take questions.
I have a question.